getting you. All right. Pot the music back. Okay. Hey, good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. Got a piece of turkey caught on my throat. Hey, happy Thanksgiving Eve. Are you looking forward to gathering together with your friends and family tomorrow? I certainly hope so. That's exactly what we're going to do, get together with all kinds of friends, family scattered from hell to next Tuesday. So Kathy and Molly and I are going to go over to some friend's house and get together with, I don't know, how many people are going to be there, about 8 or 10? Yeah, it'll be a good time. Hope you're going to have a good day tomorrow, too. We'll be off Thursday and Friday then, tomorrow and Friday. However, tune in. Kathy has rebroadcasts of a couple of memorable Malloy programs. So we'll be here in spirit. One thing I would like to see this president do, if he does nothing else, if not this president, some president, stop this ridiculous granting amnesty to the turkey routine. I mean, the first time this was done, who was it? George Herbert Walker Bush was the first one to do it. The first time it was done, it had a bit of, a morbid cachet to it. You know, like, oh, 1 out of 10 million that's not going to have his little head cut off. Oh, okay, I guess that's funny. Oh, not a knee slapper, but kind of funny. But every year for 20 years? Come on. Okay? Please, somebody, notify the press secretary and let him notify the president to stop this. If Obama serves his term, there's 3 more of these coming, and if he serves a second term, 4 more, 7 more times, he's going to stand there and say something, if I was going to eat this sucker, please stop. Please stop the faux turkey mercy thing. Dana Perino, as we told you the other night, she was recently nominated by Obama to the Broadcasting Board of Governors, which oversees broadcasts for foreign consumption from the United States, like Voice of America and those propaganda outlets. And the fact that Dana Perino was actually nominated by Obama means he reached into the muck and pulled this crazy broad out and said, here, I want her on the board. Well, on Sean the Baby Jesus' Hannity, his show on Fox News the other night, the Neutron Blonde suggested Obama was playing politics by refusing to describe the massacre at Fort Hood as a terrorist attack. She said, we should call it what it is. You know, here's somebody that, once again, has been plucked from obscurity by someone who she, if you go by her words and her actions, she thoroughly despises Obama, holds him in utter contempt. And he appoints her to a board. I don't know why. I guess this is the Obama, I'll do anything to try to make people like me, or I've got to, go along to get along, or get along to go along, or some such nonsense. But when she was on Hannity's program, I want you to hear this. This is Hannity and Stuart Varney, who used to work at CNN, another one of these right-wingers who got dumped into the slop at Fox News. Anyway, it's Hannity and Varney, and they have Dana Too Much Cappuccino Perino in the middle.
To wonder, does he really understand national security and that we really do have a war on terror, which they have been hesitant to use?
There is one thing that I would say about Fort Hood that I feel very strongly about, which is, and I don't say this to be political, I think it matters a lot what we call it. And we had a terrorist attack on our country. And we should call it what it is because we need to face up to it so that we can prevent it from happening again.
I agree with you. And you know, why won't they say what you just so simply said?
They want to do all of their investigations. I don't know all of the thinking that goes into it, but you know, we did not have a terrorist attack on our country during President Bush's term. I hope they're not looking at this politically. I do think that we owe it to the American people to call it what it is.
If you say Allahu Akbar before the shooting and you reached out to Al-Qaeda 20 times, it's a pretty good indication you're a terrorist sympathizer.
Oh, Hannity, shut your goddamn mouth. Really. Well, what a jerk Hannity is. But did you notice that these two brave white men, one a Brit and the other one an American. I don't know, maybe Stuart Varney's got American citizenship now. But there they sit, these two half-asses, and between them sits this dumb blonde who says we did not have a terrorist attack on our country during President Bush's term. You know, I guess she means unless you count the big one on September 11th, 2000, goddamn one. Can you believe this? Can you play that again? I want to make sure people hear this. Just play it again. Go ahead. You got it queued up?
To wonder, does he really understand national security and that we really do have a war on terror, which they have been hesitant to use?
There is one thing that I would say about Fort Hood that I feel very strongly about, which is, and I don't say this to be political, I think it matters a lot what we call it. And we had a terrorist attack on our country. And we should call it what it is because we need to face up to it so that we can prevent it from happening again.
I agree with you. And you know, why won't they say what you just so simply said?
Yeah, Sean.
It's, you know, they want to do all of their investigations. I don't know all of their thinking that goes into it. But
all their thinking.
You know, we did not have a terrorist attack on our country during President Bush's term. I hope they're not looking at this politically.
Stop it. It's astonishing to me. I wouldn't expect more than what this little prick Sean Hannity delivers. I really wouldn't. I mean, this guy is so out of the loop of reality. You know, another multimillionaire talking head on Fox News who is paid to propagandize, lie, sneak, and be a coward and try to convince everyone else to be a coward. But there's this Dana Perino. I mean, what goddamn planet was she on September 11, 2001? Or who did she think was president? Well, never mind. You know, this is Sarah Palin light, so it really doesn't matter. But it's just astonishing to me that neither Hannity nor Stuart Varney would say a word. And you wonder why Fox News viewers are so effed up. They couldn't find their ass with both hands. They don't even know who's president. Oh, it's some Muslim from Libya, Kenya. I don't know. Where's he? Jesus, God. Well, anyway, a bunch of you sent this to me, so thanks to everyone. And Paul, I think it's Paul, who said he sent it in. He said, here's a clip of Dana Perino on Fox telling us that there's never been a terrorist attack during Bush's watch. And then Paul adds, don't you know, Mike, we've always been at war with Afghanistan. We always will be at war with Afghanistan. I want to save that clip, Kathy. I want to get that part of where Perino says there's never been a terrorist attack. There wasn't a terrorist attack on Bush's watch. Huh.
Maybe I can run it through some audio program and slow it down a tad. So you can actually...
How do people get
human noises coming out of her mouth.
Yeah, how do people get away with that? I mean, seriously. And then when you think about the asininity of people who listen to Fox, even for the weather report. These bastards lie about the weather report. You know, they tell people in Minnesota it's going to be rainy and it snows. They tell people in Long Island that it's going to be cool and the temperature goes up. They lie about everything. Everything. That just about blew me away. All right, we have a report tonight from Kay Petrini, our education affairs correspondent, teacher in San Francisco, Prairie 2. Has a little, I'll call it a Thanksgiving, a Thanksgiving message, and a couple of statements tonight. One from Greenpeace, and also coming up at the bottom of this hour. Now we're going to change things a little bit tonight. Instead of doing podcast trivia on Fridays when we're not going to be here, we're going to do it tonight, but instead of at the bottom of the hour, we're going to probably wait till the last segment in the program, which would be about 10 before the hour. We will do the podcast subscription quiz and giveaway, but in about 15 minutes when we come back from the bottom of the hour break, I want you to hear something. It runs about 8 minutes, but it's something, a little film put together by Chase Whitestead and Eric Stroll of New Left Media. And I don't think you can prepare yourself for this, so just stick around. We'll play it for you coming back after the next break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Why should I bother when I look like I look? I know lots of people are smarter than me. I have this philosophy. So what? Yeah. If he throws it down the face and a beautiful phone for a cup, and we'll run around all the men in North. Yeah.
microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. I think it's a good time for my Rolaids sponsored Relief of the Week story. This was on the news tonight, too. In Suffolk County, Long Island, a judge there has awarded a family, a Long Island family, their East Patchogue house, wiping the slate clean on their mortgage debt and ruling that the bank holding their home loan had acted in a manner, according to the judge, so completely devoid of good faith that equity cannot be permitted to intervene on its behalf, end quote. The Suffolk County Supreme Court Justice Jeffrey Spinner blasted the actions of IndyMac Mortgages, Mortgage Service, and its representatives, and awarded the home to Diana Horowski and her husband, Greg Horowski, thereby canceling the mortgage. What had happened? These people fell behind. Once again, sickness. They got behind in their mortgage payments. First of all, they were given a loan at 10% interest during, the craziness that the mortgage industry decided to just, bend America over, as Rush Limbaugh talks about, and really cause some damage. He loves using that expression, doesn't he? Bend them over, grab their ankles. Anyway, this family eventually went into receivership and with the bank. It was going to be repossessed. They tried and tried and tried to make payments. At one point, the bank agreed to let them try. And before they could even make the first payment, they changed their mind and said, no, we want the house. So I went to court, and these people fought back. And the judge looked at all the documents, everything that this family had tried to do to satisfy. They weren't trying to get out of their mortgage. They were trying to make payments. But if the bank would just hold off a little bit, let them make half payments, let them make a third of the payment, let them refinance anything. Don't hit them with the adjusted rate that was coming. No, screw you, was the attitude of the mortgage company. Well, the judge took a look at it and said, that's it. The deal is ended. The plaintiffs with the bank, the defendants get the house. The mortgage is hereby declared paid in full. A spokesman for the lender, IndyMac Mortgage, which is now a division of One West Bank, FSB, a spokesman for that lender was not immediately available today. And I thought when I saw the story on NBC tonight, I thought, well, I'll be damned. The bank finally. I know that a couple of sheriffs around, I think Wayne County in Detroit, has refused to continue to throw people on the street in foreclosure proceedings. But here's the first time a judge has said that the effort made by the homeowners was so intense and so dedicated and so deliberate, and they were trying, and the lendee or the lender just kept jerking around until finally the judge says, all right, that's enough of that. So there you go. That little story was brought to you by Rolaids. How do you spell relief? R-O-L-A-I-D-S? Man. I don't know. I like these. I like these little Rolaids relief story of the week. You find something where, the common person wins, which causes a lot of relief to people that are reporting the story. Word from Washington is that President Obama has no plans to join a global treaty banning landmines, because a policy review found that the United States could not meet its security commitments without them. What? We can't meet our security commitments without landmines? Landmines have caused 5,200 casualties last year. That's the latest figures. And of those 5,200, a third of them were children. That's according to the Nobel Prize-winning International Campaign to Ban Landmines. Landmines. What the hell did I say? Landmines. The United States generally abides by the provision of this treaty. This treaty is 10 years old, the Mine Ban Treaty. But it refuses to sign on. It says, well, we've got, you know, we have friends that we can't abandon by signing this. Well, the only countries of consequence that haven't signed this, it's been endorsed by 156 countries, United States, Russia, China, and India have not adopted it. 156 countries have, but Russia, China, India, and us. And the Obama State Department is saying, well, we can't go along with this treaty because, you know, we have to protect our friends. Our friends? We can't throw our friends in the creek. What? And we also need landmines because we couldn't meet our security commitments without them.
It's More Mike Malloy.
It's 26 before the hour. Okay, we're going to break this into three pieces for you now. It's all from one video. Chase Whitestead and Eric Stroll of New Left Media set out to determine just what it was about Sarah Palin that impelled her supporters to stand in massive lines for hours for a chance to meet her at book signings. So what they did, they went to a Borders bookstore in Columbus, Ohio the other day, and they interviewed several of her supporters who were waiting in line. As you'll hear, Palin's fans expressed a very strong support for her, but it was mostly in vague generalities about her being real and strong and fair. I want you to listen to the first part of this.
Tell us why you're out here today.
I am out here today because I want to meet Sarah Palin.
Oh, we're out here to have a chance to meet Sarah Palin.
She makes me proud to be a woman, and she's strong. I think she's refreshing, a breath of fresh air.
She's like a rock star in the conservative movement.
She stands for what America is.
Yeah. And what do you mean by that, if you could clarify further?
Freedom.
No.
Our liberty. The right to speak.
She is the epitome of conservativeness. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, if the Republican Party doesn't back her, it doesn't matter because she's going to get the presidency.
And do you hope she runs for president?
I'd love it. I would like to see her be our first female president.
What are some particular issues of Sarah's that you would like to see her bring to office?
Oh, gee. Help me out here, guys.
Fairness. Yeah. Realness.
But any policies, I guess, specifically that you of hers?
I can't think of the policies right off the bat. She's someone who can make a difference?
Yeah. What differences would you like to see her make?
I don't know. I guess I never really thought about it.
What are her proposals for health care?
I'm not really sure.
What are some issues of hers that you agree with?
I'm not sure where you're going with that. What issues?
How about foreign policy? What did you like to see her do in terms of foreign policy?
To be honest with you, I don't know anything about her foreign policy. I don't know. I really don't have an answer. I don't know her well enough, her thinking. I don't know what she knows or what she doesn't know. I wouldn't know half the stuff that probably some people ask me.
What do you think she would bring in terms of policy to office?
Good judgment again.
Any specifics?
I think that she would get control of some of the out-of-control spending.
Clean up the spending. Stop the spending.
She's for decreased taxes, cutting taxes, making a more, entrepreneurial, like, conducive environment for our country, you know, getting back to less government dependence on things, back to individuals, and just a healthy, healthy country.
Now, are you scared yet? Huh? This is a classic example, and great thanks to Chase Whitestead and Eric Stroll for doing this. I think this shows clearly what happens when you watch Fox Channel. You don't know anything. And as far as Sarah Palin is concerned, well, you're listening to her fans. When pressed to cite those specific policies, most of them were struggling to come up with anything other than, you know, cutting taxes and getting spending in line. Here's part two.
What's some of the spending you'd like to see cut?
All of it. All of it.
Definitely more cost efficiencies and limit spending and cap and trade and all that.
And what are some of the problems that you have with the cap and trade as proposed by Democrats in Congress?
I don't know too much about it, but I mean, a lot of it's just the whole, like, too much spending for, it's, you know, it sounds great on paper, but really it means people are going to suffer in the end, so.
You want to give away your own money, that's fine, but don't tell me to give away my money. That's socialism.
Barack Obama, he wrote two books describing in detail exactly what he's going to do.
Yeah. And what did the books describe?
Well, you know, his Marxism, Leninism, you know, socialism.
I think that she would acknowledge the system of government in the United States rather than focus of administration of czars.
Yeah. And what are some of your problems with czars?
I'm an American.
Yeah.
We don't have czars in America.
I don't think he likes the military. I think he can pretend that he does. I don't think he likes the military at all.
The way I think the country is going, I'm wondering whether or not we're going to have a presidential election in 2012.
Yeah.
I know there's some backroom talk of martial law. I'll give you one scenario that would absolutely do it, is if an atom bomb goes off in the United States.
We're no longer an exceptional country. We're no longer the shining light, the beacon to the world of what a society should look to be as far as freedom. We're just another country.
And you think Sarah will win if she throws her hat into the ring?
Well, he's naturalizing a lot of illegal aliens. He's in the process of doing that.
Oh, my God.
They're saying she's not going to have the votes when you throw those numbers in.
There won't be enough white votes on one side to get a candidate through.
No way.
I don't think he's even an American citizen.
We do need to have profiling. I mean, the politically correctness has got to get out now. I mean, we're Americans, and she sticks up for the American people, not for other people.
Yeah.
We're first, other people last.
When you're right, you don't have to compromise.
Yeah.
Compromise is for people that are wrong.
The state that she did govern was right across the street from Russia.
Right.
So you could cross
the street and you'd be in another country.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that she's ever had to deal with Russia, but I'm sure she's had, you know, boundary issues that she had to deal with.
Yeah.
Like, we got boundary issues in Mexico right now.
Governor Velasquez are the only one that has a top security.
What's that mean?
That means that if anything happens to our borders on that side, she's the first one of the line of attack for there.
Drill, baby, drill, for one. I mean, that's one thing, absolutely. Right.
A lot of people are saying that we don't have enough, there's not enough oil.
Well, look at it like this. Suppose that we do drill, and not just for oil but for gas, while we're talking about that, look, some of these special interest groups like PETA and that try to do endangered species with polar bears and other animals. Well, now we need to get the polar bears off the endangered list so that we can drill there.
We got all this energy, self-sufficient oil, gas right under our feet. Why aren't we exploring more for it and drilling here instead of sending all that money overseas and then exporting or importing all that oil back to us?
Oh, my God. Oh, Jesus in heaven. Oh, somebody. Muhammad, are you listening? Is the Buddha around? Somebody, is there any divinity? Wait, I'm an atheist. Listen to this. You can hear Glenn Beck in here. You can hear Fox. You can hear Lou Dobbs. Did you folks know that Obama is granting amnesty to all these Mexicans? Did you know that? Oh, yeah, he's doing that. And that's going to give him all the votes. We got time for the third clip. Let her rip.
The second policy I love is the abortion issue.
Partial birth abortion, a baby is within this much of being a baby. And they gouge it from
behind. We have laws against it now, right?
Yeah, but they're being thrown out, chiseled at day after day. Yeah.
Like those laws are being taken away.
Yes, they are.
But it seems like in recent years they're actually being strengthened.
He said he was against partial birth abortion, but he's done nothing to prove that.
Well, how has he been supportive of partial birth abortion?
Well, you know, on the spur of the moment, I can't tell you that. I just believe that I've heard that over and over again.
Yeah.
And I know it's going on.
Right.
These procedures are happening.
Where have you been hearing that? A lot of people have said that to us. I'm just trying to get an idea of where people are hearing this.
Well, I belong to church groups, study groups, and, you know, I watch television all the time.
And what are you watching on television to find this?
Well, I watch Fox News a lot.
And what are some of those freedoms that you think have been taken away?
Well, I really think the fact that I am a Christian, I think that the government and the mainstream media has been playing a role in, gosh.
So you think your freedom to be a Christian has been jeopardized?
Well, not only
speech,
not only Christian, freedom for religion here, and with the it's a slippery slope.
Do you hope that she runs for president in 2012?
Yes, I do.
And you'd support her?
I sure would.
Do you think there might be any problem with supporting her, knowing that you're not familiar with her foreign policy issues?
No, that wouldn't keep me from not voting for her.
A lot of people that are less informed about politics, when it does come up in the public sector, they want to yell and scream.
This is not rocket science. I'm talking about going back to the basics of America.
We need good people like her that aren't afraid to speak up for reality.
Yeah, she had her time as governor, but I think she's got something up her sleeve.
And I think you're going to see crowds like this wherever she goes.
Oh, my God. Did you?
Because of course you'll see crowds like that wherever she goes, because the morons just clump together
flocks. Thanks to Chase Whitestead and Eric Stroll of New Left Media. You can get to this video all over the web. We're going to post this probably up at our website tomorrow. But I mean, as you listen to that, it's just mind-boggling. There was not a single answer that registered on the truth or logic meter. It was unbelievable. All right, we're going to break here. When we come back, trivia for a one-year subscription to Malloy Downloads. Stick around.
They shout the last word. Put your good sense out the pasture. Drop your IQ. That's what I do. My advice to girls and guys who want to be a Nobel Prize finalist. Rocket scientists, try applying this. Keep the customers coming around. If you're smart, then you better start dumbing it down. Don't say anything too profound. Dumb it down. I want to hear you.
It's time once again for Malloy Program Podcast Trivia, wherein a simple answer to a very simple question. The right answer will win you a one-year subscription to Malloy Program Podcast Downloads, commercial-free. Are you ready? The excitement is palpable. Or something. All right, let's see if we can give one of these suckers away. Tyler is in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Tyler?
Yes.
Can you hear me okay?
Oh, yeah.
All right. You ready to play this game?
I guess.
All right. Why do you want a Malloy Show podcast download free subscription, for heaven's sake?
I actually called in to talk to Malloy himself, so I'm a slave to your radio station right now.
Okay. Well, that sounds good enough for me. All right. You ready?
Let's do it.
All right. Last year around the holidays, failed vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin was mocked and criticized for her potentially inappropriate participation in what event? Here we go. A, for wearing a skin-tight jumpsuit to author Michael Crichton's funeral. B, for hunting a flock of medicated geese from a helicopter. C, for failing to invite then soon-to-be son-in-law Levi Johnston to Thanksgiving dinner. Or D, for sipping coffee and saying, "This is fun," while live turkeys were plunged headfirst into a metal funnel a few feet behind her.
I'm going to say A.
You're going to say A? Oh, yes. Tyler, no. Oh, I'm sorry, man. It was D. Don't you remember those turkeys that were being ground into, their heads were being ground into air and dust? Well, she, all right, that's right. Tyler, thanks, man. You can get another shot if you want to try second hour and third hour. Yeah, I thought that was easy, too. But then again, Kathy, we live this stuff. You know, a lot of people have real lives. All right, here we go. Who's up next? Paul in Racine, Wisconsin. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Mike.
You ready to take a shot at this?
Oh, I reckon so. I can't get no worse than turning on Fox News. It's like coating my house with lead paint. This is a lot better than that.
I hear that. All right. Here we go. What final faux pas did the Bush White House make around the holidays in 2008? A, they mailed invitations to a White House Hanukkah reception that showed a photo of a Christmas tree. B, they mailed out Christmas cards with photos of Barney the Terrier finding a weapon of mass destruction under the holiday tree. C, they invited a prominent Muslim scholar to Thanksgiving dinner, but he was fasting because it was Ramadan. Or D, they served champagne punch to underprivileged children visiting for a No Child Left Behind New Year's Eve holiday White House tour. Which one was it, Paul?
Well, I think it's probably C.
C, they invited a prominent Muslim scholar to Thanksgiving dinner when he was fasting because it was Ramadan.
It sounds like Bush.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? But no, that wasn't it. I'm sorry, Paul. It was A. They mailed invitations to a White House Hanukkah reception that showed a photo of a Christmas tree. But any of those could have been right. All right, thanks, Paul. I appreciate you giving it a shot. Mark is in Albany, New York. You ready to try it?
Yes, sir.
All right, Mark, here we go. We're not doing very good tonight, are we? I thought one of these, well, again, they're obvious to us, but we, you know, we live this stuff. Here you go. Following the tragedy of Hurricane Katrina, what ironic holiday gifts did Bush and Cheney give each other for Christmas? All right, here you go. Was it A, Bush gave Dick a framed oil painting of Bourbon Street during Mardi Gras, and Dick gave W a statue of Louis Armstrong? Or B, they gave each other wireless weather tracking devices? Or C, Bush gifted Dick with a personal life-saving device that should he be stranded in a flood, and Dick gave Raisin Brain a voodoo doll shaped like John Kerry? Or D, they gave each other original signed copies of A Streetcar Named Desire? Which one was it? Hello? Mark? Mark fell down. These are too damn long. All right, you want to hear him again?
I heard you.
Okay.
All right, my answer is none of the above. Your show sucks, Fox.
Ah, really? Oh, Mark, you're such a... Did you get him? My show sucks because Fox rules. Yeah! Poor Mark. This is what happens when you get somebody like Mark who can't, you know, he doesn't know what the hell to say. It's way over his head. Fox rules? Yes, Mark, in your world, it does.
Little neocon tried to punk you.
I know. Isn't that sweet?
I love it when the Sarah Palin fruitcakes come out of the woodwork. And
all right, we got time for one. We still haven't given it away.
No, but we don't have...
You only took three callers.
Yeah, well,
all right. When we come back after the break at the top of the hour.
Three is our legal.
Oh, that's it? Well, yeah. we don't. Well, but that freak didn't count.
Well, if someone wants to call in with the correct answer to that last question, I'll take the first correct caller.
Okay, here we go. Following the tragedy of Hurricane Katrina, what holiday gifts did Bush and Cheney give each other? And here are your selections. Bush gave Dick a framed oil painting of Bourbon Street. And Dick gave W a statue of Louis Armstrong. That's A. B, they gave each other wireless weather tracking devices. C, Bush gave Dick a personal life-saving device should he be stranded in a flood, and Dick gave Raisin Bran a voodoo doll. Or D, they gave each other signed original copies of a streetcar named Desire. If you think you have the answer, give us a call, 877-996-2556. Keep calling right through the break, and as soon as we get a winner, Kathy will take the pertinent information, as we say. All right, we'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Is your credit score?
It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Show. All right, we still have one of these year-long subscriptions to the program, podcast downloads. We have Steve in Arlington, Washington or Virginia?
Washington.
Arlington, Washington. All right, Steve, you ready?
Ready.
All right, here we go. Following the tragedy of Hurricane Katrina, what ironic holiday gifts did Bush and Cheney give each other for Christmas? Was it A, W gave Dick a framed oil painting of Bourbon Street during Mardi Gras, and Deadeye gave W a statue of Louis Armstrong. B, they gave each other wireless weather tracking devices. C, Bush gave Dick a personal life-saving device in case he gets stranded in a flood, and Dick gave Raisin Bran a voodoo doll shaped like John Kerry. Or D, they gave each other signed original copies of A Streetcar Named Desire.
That would be B, because they can't trust the Fox News Weather Channel.
That's true. All right. You got it. All right, Steve. I guess Kathy already got the pertinent information from you, right?
Yes, she did.
All right. Well, listen, thank you very much. I hope you enjoy it, and have a good holiday, all right?
You too, and I love your show.
Thank you, Steve. Take care.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
All right, so we did give
Fox News rocks!
Rules.
Rules and rocks and rolls too, man! We hate you, Malloy! You think you're so smart and stuff. Sarah Palin's right across the street from Putin. What do you want her to do? Screw those polar bears.
Prairie 2 has written in for this this holiday eve, and I would like to share with you what our economics affairs correspondent has written. Prairie 2 writes, fears that the U.S. dollar would strengthen and cause the worldwide market bubble to burst. No, we don't need that. Came to naught as the U.S. dollar met a grisly end early today. The dollar was surging early on comments by the Fed chairman Ben Bernanke that the Fed was committed to a strong dollar. This didn't last long as the dollar was dragged out into the Canadian forest and eaten by a bear. This was the result of Russia announcing that it would be dumping an unspecified amount of its $400 billion in U.S. dollar reserves in favor of the Canadian dollar. The Canadian dollar jumped up about a nickel on the news, and the U.S. dollar plunged to a new low against gold and other metals. It also fell to a 16-month low against the euro. But keep in mind, this is also a paper currency and not immune to its own collapse, given the damage that Wall Street has done to the world economy. The Canadian dollar. Unemployment claims dropped last week, but the Fed chairman made it clear that unemployment will remain high. Good news for capitalists as they can continue to drive down wages. Bad news for anybody in the real economy. It is expected that there would be about 140,000 jobs lost on the next monthly report. This is a smaller number than we've been seeing, if it is true, but by no means good news. We need 125,000 new jobs per month just to keep up with population growth. So even if the government numbers are accurate, we are still losing more than a 250,000 jobs every month, and they are just plain gone. To put this in real terms, this is like losing every job in a good-sized American city every month. This damage will catch up with us soon, no matter how big the bonuses on Wall Street. Weakening the dollar is a backdoor way of putting tariffs on imports and eliminating the debt. Germany did this to pay off its World War I reparations, and it is a risky game. Fascists like Prescott Bush have a way of inserting themselves into these schemes, and they can produce unforeseen consequences. Prairie 2. Go to this website, prairie2.com. Well, then. What's this? Oh, okay. I'll get some more emails here fairly quickly. All right, Greenpeace has issued a statement in response to the White House statement on climate negotiations. Obama is going to the Copenhagen meeting, but he's going before anyone else gets there. This is what Greenpeace has to say. In response to the White House announcement today on Obama's Copenhagen attendance, Greenpeace USA Global Warming Campaign Director Damon Moglen issued the following statement. In a statement today, the Obama administration announced that the president will attend the international climate talks in Copenhagen on December 9th, more than a week before international leaders will arrive to show their commitment to shaping an ambitious and comprehensive climate deal. The administration's announcement proposes the same inadequate emission targets that were included in the House-passed climate legislation. By taking his cues from a Congress heavily influenced by the fossil fuel industry, Obama continues to shirk domestic and international leadership on climate policy. Attending the talks on December 9th amounts to nothing more than President Obama taking a photo op on his way to pick up the Nobel Peace Prize. He is leaving his delegation to the unenviable task of negotiating with a U.S. proposal that the international community cannot take seriously. Once again, we have to say to President Obama, it's the right city, but it's the wrong date. Greenpeace is calling for the president to attend on December 18th, when everyone else will be there. Commit the U.S. to climate policy the world needs and earn the Nobel Peace Prize that he is on his way to accept. Science calls for the United States and the developed world to cut pollution by at least 25% to 40% below 1990 levels by 2020 and to reduce greenhouse gas emissions 80% to 95% by 2050. Using this accepted standard, the announced target that the U.S. plans to bring to the table shoots for only 4% cut in pollution. Furthermore, the statement does not commit to providing international financing for adaptation, mitigation, and forest protection, a necessary component of getting agreement from developing nations and a major roadblock in negotiations thus far. Having gotten the numbers wrong, the money wrong, and even the date wrong, President Obama has a great deal of work to do if the U.S. is not to become a dead weight, causing the negotiations to fail. We can't change the science, so the president is going to have to change the politics. He needs to invest his political energy in a public campaign for a strong climate policy. End of statement. I eliminated one little paragraph. It is edited, but the paragraph I eliminated is pretty much repeated in the rest of the statement. So there you go. I didn't know that Obama was going to go a week before everybody else got there. Jesus, God. Oh, man. He really is letting down the core of the Democratic Party. He really is the base, as they say. Isn't it funny how the Democrats abandon the base, whereas the Republicans pander to the base, do anything, and then drag the rest of the Republicans into the mess, whereas Democrats apply or try to appeal to the so-called moderates? How can anybody be a moderate? How can you be a middle of the roader? You know, Jim Hightower said it best once. He said, the only thing you find in the middle of the road is a yellow line and dead armadillos. And that certainly applies now more than ever, doesn't it? Huh? When we come back, in the November 16th issue of The Nation, there's a fairly lengthy interview between Katrina Vandehuven, the, I think she's still the editor, publisher? I don't know. She's in charge there, the editor, I guess, editor-in-chief, and her husband, Steve Cohen. They interviewed Mikhail Gorbachev, and it's a rather lengthy interview, but there's just one question and one answer, one question from Katrina and her husband, and one answer from Mikhail Gorbachev that I want you to hear, because it has to do with Afghanistan. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Don't have to. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Now that we know, or we think we know, that Barack Obama is going to accede to the craziness and the war lovers and the warmongers and send yet another 25, 30,000 American troops into just an absolutely pointless as well as hopeless situation in Afghanistan. It might bear in mind, pay a little bit of attention to what Gorbachev has to say about that adventure. Nobody listens anymore to anybody who could advise leadership of this country to stay the hell away from Afghanistan, no matter how valid their advice is. Katrina Vandenhuvel says, but now Washington is turning to Moscow for help, most urgently, perhaps, in Afghanistan. Exactly 20 years ago, you, Gorbachev, ended the Soviet war in Afghanistan. What lessons did you learn that President Obama should heed in making his decisions about Afghanistan? Answer from Mikhail Gorbachev. One was that problems there could not be solved with the use of force. Such attempts inside someone else's country end badly. But even more, it is not acceptable to impose one's own ideas of order on another country without taking into account the opinion of the population of that country. My predecessors tried to build socialism in Afghanistan, where everything was in the hands of tribal and clan leaders or of religious leaders, and where the central government was very weak. What kind of socialism could that have been? It only spoiled our relationship with the country that we had excellent relations during the previous 20 years. Even today, I am criticized that it took 3 years for us to withdraw. But we tried to solve the problem through dialogue with America, with India, with Iran, and with both sides in Afghanistan, and we attended an international conference. We didn't simply hitch up our trousers and run for it, but tried to solve the problem politically with the idea of making Afghanistan a neutral, peaceful country. By the way, when we were getting ready to pull out our troops and were preparing a treaty of withdrawal, what did the Americans do? They supported the idea of giving religious training to young Afghans, that is, the Taliban. As a result, now they are fighting against them. Today, again, not just America and Russia can be involved in solving this problem. All of Afghanistan's neighbors must be involved. Iran cannot be ignored. And it's ill-advised for America not to be on good terms with Iran. Now, it's a lengthy interview, but I found it interesting, even though there's some self-serving comments there, when Khrushchev, when Gorbachev says it's not acceptable to impose one's own idea of order on another country without taking into account the opinion of the population of that country. Oh, my. Well, if that's the case, Mr. Former Premier, then the unraveling of Soviet history has begun. And certainly Gorbachev was one to start finding the threads, the correct threads to pull to make that whole tapestry come apart. However, he says his predecessors tried to build socialism in Afghanistan, just like we're trying to build what? Capitalism. And he says, where everything in Afghanistan was in the hands of tribal and clan leaders or religious leaders, and the central government was very weak. What kind of socialism could that have been? Well, what kind of capitalism do we think we're going to build? And I'll tell you what kind. The kind that the financial services industry and the Republicans in this country love. Corrupt capitalism. Capitalism that is so corrupt, so foul, so vile. So much involved in paying off people to keep them quiet, to move them out of the way. That's the kind of capitalism. The kind where if enough money changes hands, enough palms are greased, then anything that these captains of U.S. industry want, they'll get. But in the meantime, you see, in order to set that up, hundreds more, if not thousands more, American soldiers are going to die. And thousands more, if not tens of thousands more, Afghans and Pakistanis are going to die. So I just, you know, I can't help. This is the horrible image in my head. When I sit down with 8-10 friends and our daughter tomorrow for Thanksgiving dinner, as weird as Thanksgiving dinner really is, but, you know, what the hell, we're going to do it anyway. When we sit down, nobody around that table will have any direct experience, nor will their sons. There will be 3, 4, 5 young men at that table who are, in fact, of the age when the military likes to take people and slam them into combat. But nobody at that table is going to have anything to do with this war. Nothing. And I wonder, though, about the families where during dinner tomorrow, family members will be looking across the table at each other, and some of those family members by this time next year will be dead or half their heads blown away from going to Obama's war in Afghanistan. I just find that thought grisly.
It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine. It's the
time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This next story you can interpret as either being further proof that there are members of the Secret Service who want to see Barack Obama dead as much as Glenn Beck does, as much as Michelle Bachmann does, as much as Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh do. All of these people whose names I just popped out are wishing and hoping and praying that Barack Obama gets assassinated. This is their entire shtick, especially Beck, who's trolling for assassins. All these people are trolling for assassins because they are sick son of a bitches. And this is how they make their multi-millions of dollars, by providing this kind of wild and crazy entertainment for folks who line up for hours to hear Sarah Palin make a comment as she signs their book. You heard some of those people earlier. Well, the Secret Service now is looking into its own security procedures after determining that a Virginia couple, Michaela and Tariq Salahi, somehow managed to slip in last night to the first state dinner at the White House under the Obama administration, even though they were not on the guest list. Now, the Associated Press says, this is utter ridiculousness. This is insanity. The next sentence here: President Barack Obama was never in any danger because the party crashers went through the same security screening for weapons as the 300-plus people actually invited to the dinner honoring Indian Prime Minister Manmohan Singh. The president was never in any danger because they went through the same security screening for weapons. If these people were creative enough to get past the Secret Service, what makes the person who made this comment, who is on the spokesman for the Secret Service, what makes him so sure that they could not have also gotten into the dinner, the state dinner where this is all occurring, with some sort of explosive that could have last night wiped out not only the president and his wife, but a pretty good cross-section of the movers and shakers in the United States? The Secret Service, as you remember, is facing budgetary problems. According to the spokesman or the head of the Secret Service, they don't have enough money to hire enough people, and death threats against this president have increased 400-600% over what you normally expect from crazy people, like the people who listen to Beck, the people who line up for Palin book signings, the people who think that Sean Hannity is in the same neighborhood as the truth. These are people that the right-wingers are trolling for to shoot the president. One would think that the security details would be funded no matter what. The Secret Service's Office of Professional Responsibility is, according to the AP, reviewing what occurred. An initial finding indicated that a checkpoint did not follow proper procedures to ensure that the two were on the guest list, according again to the spokesman for the Secret Service. The spokesman said, quote, "It's important to note that they did go through all the security screenings, the magnetometer screenings, just like all the other guests did," end quote. How does that happen, huh? Has the Secret Service gotten this incompetent, or does the Secret Service have among its ranks, just like every other institution seems to have in this country, Obama haters who want to see the president dead? I wonder if the people handling the screening were lax because, maybe they think that Obama is encouraging partial birth abortion, as the right-wingers call it. maybe the Secret Service agents who were not strictly by the book and let this couple in, maybe they believe that Jesus is coming, and the best way to get his attention and bring about the rapture is to have some sort of explosive go off in a state dinner where a couple 300 high-ranking Americans and foreigners are turned into paste. Maybe the Secret Service clowns who let these uninvited guests in, maybe they think that Obama's policies with Muslims are too lax, or that, as that one freak on the audio that we played for you said, that Obama is granting amnesty to all these illegal immigrants so that he can get reelected. And that would mean that white people would be once again pushed to the back of the bus. You think? Or was it just a failure to follow procedure? What do you think, Truth Seeker? I really don't know. The fact that I have to ask the question is kind of weird to me. Got an email here from Colonel Six. Now, I have to say, you know, I like what this guy writes every time he writes to me, but I don't know he's a colonel in the United States Marine Corps. I accept it at face value until I find out otherwise, but that's how he signs it, Colonel Six, with quotes around Six, of course, USMC, Truth Seeker. No offense, Colonel Six, but I could send you an email claiming to be a direct descendant of Smedley Butler, and it would be fairly difficult for you to determine whether or not I was pulling your leg, but I will accept it at face value. Mike, you tell the truth, and that's all we want from anyone. Our families are going to have a mixed Thanksgiving. I wonder why today was chosen to announce a decision had been made about Afghanistan. To be announced formally at West Point in front of all the toy soldiers. Makes for a nice weekend. It will be done with the swagger and casualness that is the special province of those who have never had to execute these missions or bury the results. Personally, I think it would be easier and cheaper to just put platoons on a cattle truck, ship them down to the nearest meat processing plant, slaughter them as horse food. It would certainly be more humane. I know you think that we are at different ends of the spectrum, but we are not. I don't think I would listen to you for 3 hours every night for the last year if we were. I just could not find time for much radio listening in Iraq. I called around this time last year and we spoke. However, when I called back later, you had a male screener. I told him who I was, and he said, quote, "We think we will pass," end quote. I understood, and I kept listening. Mostly because when I work a certain duty, I hear your voice coming out of all these rooms. I entered a couple, and the men and women listening turned the station abruptly. I told them it was cool, and I stayed to listen with them. Pretty soon, we started to hear the words, "Keep it lit, sir," or "Keep it lit, Marine." Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. Colonel Six, USMC. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I don't know how difficult it is to write a letter like that, but thank you very much. And this from Army Times, excuse me, via the News Tribune in Tacoma. The parents of a Fort Lewis soldier killed in Iraq earlier this month say someone shot their daughter on an American military base near Kirkush. Staff Sergeant, this is in Iraq, Staff Sergeant Amy Tirador of Colony, New York, died November 4th in what the military called a non-combat incident. Her mother told the News Tribune on Tuesday that her 29-year-old daughter was shot execution style in the back of the head. The military is investigating. Officials are releasing few details. Her mother says it was not a suicide. It was not an accident. There are so many scenarios about what could have happened, and that's why everyone is so close-mouthed about it. This woman, Staff Sergeant Amy Tirador, was serving as an Arabic-speaking interrogator in Diyala province with the 209th Military Intelligence Company, 3rd Brigade, 2nd Infantry Division. An Arabic-speaking interrogator. A spokesman for the American military unit overseeing operations throughout northern Iraq said Investigators are still determining whether Tirador's death was accidental, a suicide, or a homicide. Well, Mom says she was shot in the back. Never mind. Major Jeff Allen wrote, "Here at Task Force Marne, we will do our best to keep Staff Sergeant Tirador's family informed as the investigation progresses. There are no further details we can add right now." Tirador's father said that his daughter's work as an interrogator made her a, quote, high-profile target, end quote. Tirador was the sixth woman from Fort Lewis to die in either Iraq or Afghanistan since the wars began, the first since September 2006. Well, her husband, Mickey, is in Iraq on his third tour of duty when his wife was killed. The couple were married for 3 years and had no children. Before the hour, I forgot to say podcast trivia. So if you want to get on the line right now, 877-996-2556, and we'll see if we can give away another 1 year subscription to the Malloy commercial free podcast downloads. 877-996-2556. While you are doing that, I just want to let you know that, coming up next hour, we have a report card from Kay Petrini, our educational affairs correspondent who teaches in San Francisco. All right. Do we have somebody? We're all set to do it? Okay. I think we have somebody right now, and that would be Chris, who's in Owentown? What is it, Chris?
It's Owentown in central Ontario, Mike.
Ontario province. Hey, I'm doing fine. How are you, Chris?
Wonderful. Thank you very much. And happy Thanksgiving to our American friends down there.
Well, thanks. Appreciate it. Happy Canada Day.
Thank you, sir.
When's Canada Day?
Well, Canada Day is in the summertime.
That's right, in July, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, in case we don't talk between now and then.
Grateful, Mike.
All right. Which of the following are not turkeys pardoned by W during his illegal 8 years in office? Which of the following are not turkeys pardoned by W? Flyer and Fryer, Stars and Stripes, C would be May and Flower, and D would be Scooter and Delay.
Would be not pardoned?
Yeah, which of the following are not turkeys pardoned by George W. Bush during his 8 years in office? Was it A, with the turkeys' names Flyer and Fryer, B, Stars and Stripes, C, May and Flower, or D, Scooter and Delay?
D.
D, all right!
Way to go, Michael. Thank you so much. way
to go, Chris. I mean, you know, if you asked me about a Canadian political scandal, if you all have them up there, I probably wouldn't be able to answer. So I'm impressed that...
Well, we do, Michael. And if you were to go to the CBC website tonight, there's been some transfers of prisoners sent to Afghani interrogators that have hit the highlights on our newsreels up here. And
oh, really?
Major scandal and... three generals testified today in the Commons saying that they did not receive any of these memos from a high-ranking Canadian official. So it's really hit the airwaves up our way. And
well, I'll definitely check it out. I checked CBC.com frequently. And the story that Prairie 2 wrote about tonight, how the Russians are dumping What is it? Half a billion U.S. dollars in exchange for Canadian dollars. It's finally happening. I can remember not so long ago when everybody used to go, ha, 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 Canadian dollar. Oh, you know, when you go up to Canada, your dollar, your American dollar is worth $1.60. Boy, that's not true anymore, is it?
Well, that's certainly right. And I guess kind of a concern that we have, and it's not for me to comment on because I'm not an American citizen, so I don't feel it's my place to comment on your state of affairs. However, I'm concerned about inflation at this point on your side, and certainly our tar sands with the footprint that we're producing. In fact, one of our interviewers had Gian Gomeshi, had Al Gore and David Suzuki on their show this morning, and Al Gore made a comment that when you buy oil from the tar sands of Alberta for a Prius, mm-hmm. one of the hybrids, it has the impact of a Hummer.
Oh, my God.
Yes, sir.
Well, I know that extracting the Canadian oil out there is it's a messy process, and it's a very environmentally vicious process. And I just wish people would understand that there's a better way to do this.
We really need to look ourselves in the mirror as Canadians as well, Mike, before we start pointing fingers.
Yeah, well, as far as commenting on the mess that is the United States, whether you're a citizen or not, you certainly have a right to do that because it's the behemoth that exists just south of the Canadian border. Canadians seem to be immune. Your banking system survived, probably because you have the National Bank of Canada.
And also we also rather have some very tight regulations.
Yeah.
With regards to what banks can get involved in as well, you know.
I have some friends who are not seriously considering. They made the commitment. They're moving to Vancouver, British Columbia. They're going to live for 2 years, and I believe that 2-year residency is required to apply for Canadian citizenship. These are Americans who have just had enough. They have a child to raise, and they just don't want to be here anymore.
It's a very sad state of affairs. One final note, if you'd permit me, Mike.
Sure.
I have, although I've not... I'm not a military veteran, but I do have post-traumatic stress disorder. And for what it's worth, I'm not advocating the use of, but I'm just saying for my own personal well-being as well as therapy with my post-traumatic stress disorder, I found that marijuana is very, very helpful. And there's a lot of websites for veterans who I work with mm-hmm. traumas and addiction issues. I guess we'll find our own way, but certainly for some of the guys I work with and myself, it seems to be a very therapeutic way.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Marijuana is a gift from the cosmic hoo-ha, and it should be used as such. I talk about a reefer on this program a lot. I never advocate its use for children, but certainly for adults or just for recreation or in a medicinal setting or in a therapeutic setting or in a, and that therapeutic setting doesn't necessarily have to be physical. It can be for emotional stress, certainly. And, I just wish that people would kind of wake up to that and stop, demonizing a weed. Hey, good to talk to you, Chris.
You as well, Michael.
All right, sir. Take care. Stay on the line and, Kathy will, get the pertinent information. Okay.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, sir. All right, we'll be back after the break, y'all. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This hour we are going to give away one more free Molloy Show podcast download for a year. Free subscription, so stick around for that. It is time once again for the Education Affairs correspondent, Kay Petrini, who has sent us in her report card. It has to do with, well, we shall share it with you. Well, I can, well, not yet. We're not going to share it with them yet. Oh, okay. Well, then we will right now. Teach your children well, 'cause their father's hell. Kay Petrini is a school teacher in San Francisco. And she writes, "Hi, Mike. It's Thanksgiving week, so I thought I would report something encouraging. I always try to wrap up my history units by connecting what students have learned to current events. My world history students just finished their unit on the French Revolution, so the logical step was to put together some articles and video clips of the almost yearly French worker strikes. My goal was to illustrate that although the French had to cycle through more upheavals before they truly became a democratic republic, the spirit of Bastille Day carries on to the present. I also had a copy of the film Sicko on hand, so I decided to show the segments in which Michael Moore travels to France to learn about their healthcare system. And I made sure to explain that Mr. Moore is not objective. He has a bias, which he uses to try to get us to think. The kids' reaction to the video clips were completely authentic, and listening to their observations was so encouraging. Their comments were totally free of the spin that we hear from the shills in government and the media. Here are some examples of what the kid says. Those truck drivers just stopped in the middle of the road and they got what they wanted? Why don't we do that? Wait a minute. You mean that in France, people who work at McDonald's get health care? That's not fair. I mean, that's not fair to us. We don't have that. They have daycare centers like that, and people don't have to pay a ton of money for them? My mom could have used something like that. College is free? No way. Why don't we have that? My parents would pay more taxes for that. My students' remarks were so logical and uncomplicated that when I sat down to watch some news later that day, my head started to spin. When I compared the kids' comments with the spineless BS coming out of the U.S. Senate, I almost lost it. The hemming and hawing by Democratic Senators Nelson, Landrieu, and Lincoln just about pushed me over the edge, especially when I compared it with the refreshing honesty of my students in class that day. It really could be so simple, but the stranglehold corporate America has on our elected representatives will continue to make meaningful health care reform impossible. That's why the only hope I have these days is for the next generation. If they can hold on to those straightforward views of what's fair and unfair as they move into adulthood, then maybe this country still has a chance. Wishing you and your family a wonderful holiday, Kay. Kay Petrini, who is a school teacher in San Francisco and also our education affairs correspondent. Her report for the Thanksgiving holidays. Thank you, Kay. Kay needs to do what Bob Alexander did and get a website where she can post her comments, because we do get questions or comments from listeners who say they like what she wrote, would like to see a little bit more. All right, the number here is 877-996-2556. We invite your phone calls for the rest of the program. What the hell? Why not? Again, program note, we will be off Thanksgiving night, tomorrow night and Friday, and back on Monday. There will be two Molloy program broadcasts, though, both Thanksgiving night and Friday night. And I don't know, maybe depending on when you get together with your family, maybe you'll listen, maybe not. But these rebroadcasts will be available for you. So if you're so inclined, both tomorrow night and Friday night, there will be Molloy Show broadcasts, but they will not be live. What else do we have? Okay, one more. This is Stephen Pizzo, who is rapidly becoming one of my favorite bloggers. He writes, it's the day before Thanksgiving. He wrote this today. It's the day before Thanksgiving, so I won't be my usual little black cloud of worry. That's not to say there's not plenty of to worry about. There is, but I'll keep it to myself. I do want to point out an inconsistency, though, and you might just collar your members of your member of Congress when they come home for the holidays and ask them, explain this to me, please. Here it is. Why is it so many in Congress fret no end over the nearly $1 trillion it will cost to keep Americans well and alive, but they don't bat an eyelash over the $1 trillion it will cost to kill people in Afghanistan if we send more troops there? Well, excuse the hell out of me for asking. Look, if the health care reform has to be deficit neutral, then so should whatever the hell they decide to do in Afghanistan. Either we have the money it'll take to kill people halfway around the world, or we don't. And if we don't have the money to provide health services to 40 million Americans, then we don't have the money to, you know, liberate the opium farmers and warlords of Afghanistan either. So, to those who oppose health care reform, particularly the public option, here's the deal. Find a way to fully fund the war in Afghanistan, and we'll let go. We'll all go kill people there. Then we get health care reform with a strong public option. No real health care reform, no more for Afghanistan. Because if we can't afford one, we can't afford the other. We can't afford the other. No more "we'll pay you tomorrow for a hamburger today" war financing. Have a nice Thanksgiving, Steve. Well, yeah, the Democrats are already talking about it. They're talking about a war tax. And what is just so squirrely and so typically Republican, the Republican, "Oh, war tax? Oh, no, I don't pay no tax." Well, do you support the war in Afghanistan? Yeah. Well, how do you want to pay for it? Cut Medicare. Tax? I don't pay no tax. Isn't it the truth? These cowardly sons of bitches on the right, these cowardly Republicans and their spokesgeeks in media, support a war but don't want to pay for it. Jesus, God. And, you know, war costs a lot of money. It costs money to kill people. It really does. It costs money to kill people and blow things up. And as far as the talk about hearts and minds, you know, McChrystal laid out a pretty good scenario as to why we should get the hell out of there. And then he turns around and says you might need up to 80,000 troops to accomplish something. Well, we'll know Tuesday night, won't we, when Barack Obama goes to West Point and Military Academy and gives his speech to the American people about what he's going to do and why he's going to do it. It should be very interesting, wouldn't you think? I would imagine it'll be on just about the time we start the program, so we'll carry it live. But it costs a lot of money to blow people up and to kill things and destroy property, which is the sole function of the U.S. military. When they talk about winning the hearts and minds, Jesus, God, come on, please. I realize it was 40 years ago. But we've heard this before. I mean, if you're of a certain age, I guess you have to be over 50. Oh my God. To remember the lies and the BS and the promises and the gore and the blood and the viciousness and the murder and the killing that we went through in this country up till 19. When did it all end? When did we bug out of Vietnam? 73? So when they talk about winning hearts and minds in Afghanistan, there's two chances of that happening, slim and none. That's not what the military is for. The military, the sole function of a military, the sole function is to kill people and destroy things. If it's given any other function, it's not going to succeed.
Every night, it's just another day.
Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We'll do another podcast trivia right after the next break. So if you want to take a shot at it. Pat is in Temperance, Michigan, listening on Sirius. Hey, Pat.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
Oh, I'm wonderful. Thank you. You know, I live right next door to Toledo.
Oh, man, I spent so much time in Temperance, Michigan. Don't you live near Toledo Beach?
I don't even know where that is. I'm a mile north of Toledo, right near Lewis and Alexis.
Oh, well, you're closer in. Yeah. Well, Temperance, Michigan, like I say, oh my God, we used to, the kids who went to high school in Temperance used to cross over into Ohio with their phony IDs because in Michigan you had to be 21 to drink beer. But in Ohio, you only had to be 18 and you could drink low beer. Do you remember low beer?
No.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God. So we used to get all the kids from like Temperance and Monroe who would come over and drink beer with us.
Mm-hmm. I know. I was one of them.
Oh my God. All right. There you go. Hi, Pat.
Hi. In fact, I grew up, around the Dearborn area and I used to drive all the way down to Toledo for that.
Yeah.
Last Monday night we were driving home. Our youngest daughter lives in Cambridge,
mm-hmm.
and we have Sirius on one of our vehicles. And I don't know. I just kept tuning to the stations and found you, and it was just so cool to hear someone who was telling us truth. That's unusual. It wasn't filtered.
So this is you just started listening to the program last week.
Yeah.
I'll be darned. Well, good. Well, thank you very much. I'm glad you found it. Sirius carries us. XM carries us. We're on the internet. Also, in about, I don't know, our list isn't updated. Maybe we must be on at least 25 or 30 radio stations now. So, but not Toledo. I would love to be in Toledo. Then you could listen to it on the air, but we're not there yet.
Well, I stream you from a station out of Columbus.
Columbus, Ohio?
Right.
Yeah, I guess we're back on in Columbus, right?
Mm-hmm, on a progressive station here. But the reason I'm calling you is that a couple days ago I was online and I got talking to a gentleman that was Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it seems like the Europeans know more about our politicians and our politics than we do.
And Canadians, too, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, he started telling me how he hates warmongers and... he asked me if I had ever studied about the American Enterprise Institute, and I had never even heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
I went on Wikipedia and printed out the 20 pages on it, and I read it last night at work. But he also told me, he was kind of warning me, that Europeans don't think that President Obama will probably, he may not finish out his term, that they think that it will either... be taken out by the KKK or by Mossad.
By Mossad?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are an awful lot of people who would like to see Barack Obama shot. A lot of them are in media. You know, just going back to what you said, though, about checking out American Enterprise Institute, I don't know if you've read what they told you to take a look at, but... The American Enterprise Institute is a right-wing conservative think tank. It was the AEI scholars who were the architects of the second Bush administration's public policy.
Isn't it kind of pretty much like the Committee of 300 and, you know, all the others?
Well, I don't know what that is, but I know that the American Enterprise Institute is a hard-right organization. John Bolton, who was Bush's recess appointment as our ambassador to the UN, a Bolton who is certifiably mad, as far as I'm concerned, and a real warmonger, wants to see nothing more than the entire Middle East go up in flames. He is either on the board of directors of the AEI or he's one of the fellows of the AEI. So, sure, read the stuff, but keep in mind that it is a hard right neoconservative organization.
Oh, right. But it also states that Hillary and Bill are on it, too.
The American Enterprise Institute?
Yes.
I'm not aware of that at all. And where did you...
Wikipedia. Now, I don't know how much on there is truthful. But
well, they're pretty... they're pretty truthful, but when I have... gone to Wikipedia about American Enterprise Institute, I don't think I have ever seen Bill and Hillary Clinton. As a matter of fact, American Enterprise Institute would do anything to end both Clinton careers. So I would question that. If you have an actual printout where it says that the Clintons are members of AEI, I would like to see that, if you could send it to me.
Okay. I know I printed it out, I read it, and I gave it to my husband to read because we work together. I don't know if he threw his copy out. If he didn't, I'll send you the Wikipedia link as long as it's still on there, because who knows who might have added their name.
Yeah, because, Wikipedia, AEI is all neocons and hard right-wingers. Hey, listen, Pat, I'm glad you found the program, and thank you very much for checking in. Call again sometime, okay? Take care. Happy Thanksgiving. We'll be right back.
Ready to make nice, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Warren is in Revere, Massachusetts, listening on Radio Revolution. Hey, hey, Warren.
Hey, what's up?
You are.
Yeah, well, sometimes I'm down, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm getting a terrible echo on my cell phone here.
Oh, you are? You want to call back on a different line?
No, I'll try to go ahead because I was going to be short.
Okay, all right.
I was going to ask you if you had ever heard of or read The Road by Cormac McCarthy.
I have not.
Okay, can I tell you just a real quick thing about it?
Sure.
Okay, it's not in any religious sense whatsoever, you know, but it's like a post-cataclysmic story, you know, about a man and his son trying to survive.
Oh, it's a movie right now, right?
It came out, I think, today. I saw an ad for it in the Boston Herald, yeah.
Yeah.
And I read that book in one night, you know, except for trips to the bathroom, I read that book straight from cover to cover.
That good, huh?
And, well... You know, it was good, and it was the best book I ever read in a long time, probably, and maybe one of the worst in a way, because it just rang too true.
Mm-hmm.
With all of the things that are going on, with this just complete ignorance about, you know, environmental problems and overpopulation, and, I mean, getting to a point where we're going to have water shortages.
Right.
Nowhere in the book does it ever, you know, say that it's about global warming. And as a matter of fact, I suspect it might have been a solar flare. But you could read it either way, you know. And just the news is always so bleak these days in terms of the environment and overpopulation that sometimes I wonder if we're going to even be here in another generation or two.
And
I have a 14-year-old son, and it makes it even more sickening.
I hear you, Warren. I'm not quite sure how to answer that, except to say that, I can remember, and let me put you on hold because we're starting to get a lot of static. Warren, thanks a lot. I really do appreciate you checking in and listening on Radio Revolution in Boston. But when I was a lot younger, long time ago, I remember going to a theater and seeing the movie On the Beach, which is also based on a book written by an Australian, Neville Shute. And it was about the nuclear war in the Northern Hemisphere and had wiped out everything. A huge cloud of radiation was working its way into the Southern Hemisphere. And about the last place on Earth that was still habitable, where there were still people that were trying to live their lives, was Australia. And of course, that their days were numbered. And after seeing the movie, it left me in a state of anxiety for weeks, months, to the extent that, you know, I still remember it almost scene for scene. I didn't read the book, although I did go on and read some other Neville Shute books. He was the sort of writer like Cormac McCarthy who will get into scenarios that are futuristic or apocalyptic or what have you, and even beyond that. I also read his book In the Wet. But the point I'm trying to make is that I've been a series of movies like that based on books over over my lifetime, and certainly yours too, obviously, or you wouldn't have called in, that have really left you with a feeling of almost hopelessness. I know I did. This is, On the Beach came out at the very height, of the Cold War. I think Brezhnev was still the Soviet premier. And, it was shortly after the Cuban Missile Crisis. Or was it before? No, I think it was shortly after the Cuban Missile Crisis. Or maybe it was just before, which made the confrontation between the Soviet Union and the United States over Cuba just even more. I mean, we were convinced that the world was about to end over the Cuban Missile Crisis. Absolutely. And when I say we, I only speak for myself, but I know what the sense was. I was a lot younger then, obviously, but my friends were afraid. The parents of my friends were afraid. That was when I bought my first gun, as a matter of fact, and my friends used to laugh at me. They would say, there's going to be a nuclear war. What are you going to do, shoot a Russian missile out of the sky? And I said, no. If I happen to survive the chaos that's going to result, I've got to be able to protect myself. You know, and it was just weird. And so the writers and the poets and the artists, of course, they always get it before the rest of us do. They always try to put it out there to see if anybody's paying attention. So The Road is one of those movies I would like to see. It's a film I want to see. Warren, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you checking in. I guess the whole point of that is not to downplay the possibility of you know, tragic events at all, or apocalyptic events, not to downplay it at all. I'm as convinced as anybody else that we have some crazy people who are running all sorts of countries right now. We have some crazy people who are trying to get in positions of power. And we have some people that operate strictly out of fear and loathing and terror and torture and madness and religious insanity. These are weird times. There's no question. But what my hope is, and I think it's the hope that, a lot of people have had at various times in our history, especially in the last 60 or 70 or 80 years, is that, you know, this we'll get past this, that we'll survive this, that somehow, to use the Brit expression, we'll muddle through and come out the other side in intact. I don't know. I mean, you know, Warren, you say you have a 14-year-old child. Yeah, I've got grandchildren. I have a 5-year-old also, and it's plus adult children. It's really, really scary times. I wish we had leaders. I wish we had people who were not owned by corporate America. I wish we had, you know, wish. I wish we had people over the past or the previous 20 or 30 years who had not made these insane decisions, like George Herbert Walker Bush, like Ronald Reagan, like Bill Clinton, that got us to the point where a moron like George W. Bush and his handler, a real global psychopath like Dick Cheney, could take over and do what they did. So, yeah, scary. Scary times, spooky times, unnerving times. I hate to use the word scary and spooky because they sound like, you know, kids going trick-or-treating on Halloween. These are very tense times, you know. Dalbert is in Kansas City, Missouri. Hey, Dalbert.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
Well, I'm fine, sir. I'm scared to death.
yeah.
Listen to the vacuous minds on the interview with at the Palin function there in Columbus, Ohio, made me think, I believe it was Franklin said that democracy is only fit for an informed population.
Right.
And when you got 25 to 40% of the people in this country think this planet's only 10,000 years old, we are in deep trouble. I think you and Tom Hartman are the only hope this country has.
Well, maybe insofar as liberal talk radio, but there's a lot of people, believe it or not, there are people smarter than Tom Hartman. There are millions of people smarter than me, but there's eight or nine that are smarter than Tom Hartman.
But I
get your point. As far as liberal talk is concerned, I had forgotten, maybe I never even heard that quote by Franklin that democracy, what is it again?
Democracy is only fit for an informed population.
Yeah.
And that's paraphrasing, and I'm not sure that it was Franklin, but it was one of those people of
right.
that kind in that period of time.
Well, it makes sense, and when you look at that in the context of what passes for information today, when you look at that in the context of how, well, like you pointed out, the Columbus, Ohio Palin fans lined up at a bookstore. What the hell are they doing at a bookstore? They don't go to bookstores. They sit, they sit in front of Fox television. If she would have shown up at a slaughterhouse, they would have gone there. If she would have shown up at, a cemetery, the people would have gone there. They're damn sure not interested in books. They're interested in the celebrity of Sarah Palin, and that celebrity is probably going to be there for a long time. Dalbert, listen, thank you. I appreciate you checking in. And have a nice Thanksgiving, okay? All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to do the final round of podcast trivia tonight. And I think the one that we're going to hit you with when we come back is I'm going to give you four quotes, and you tell me which is not a Sarah Palin quote. In other words, three of them will be. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Tribute tonight on the Malloy program, where you can win a free one-year subscription to Malloy Show downloads for your iPod or your computer or your MP3 player or whatever you want to put it on. All you have to do is come up with the right answer to the question that we give you. All right, who's first here? Sheila's in Tempe, Arizona.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Sheila.
Good evening.
You're listening on KPHX, right?
Yes, I am.
Our old home from many years ago. All right, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, now remember, I want you to tell me which of the following four quotes is not a Sarah Palin quote, okay?
Okay.
All right, here's letter A. pray for our military men and women, also for this country, that our leaders, our national leaders, are sending soldiers out on a task that is from God, that there is a plan, and that plan is God's plan, B. I'm like, okay, God, if there's an open door for me somewhere, this is what I always pray. I'm like, don't let me miss the open door. Show me where the open door is. C. Only dead fish go with the flow. And D. One word sums up probably the responsibility of any vice president, and that one word is to be prepared. Now, which of those is not a Sarah Palin quote?
Oh, my goodness. Could you repeat those just one more time?
Sure. A.
Okay.
Pray for our military men and women, also for this country, that our leaders, our national leaders, are sending soldiers out on a task that is from God, that there is a plan, and that plan is God's plan. B. I'm like, okay, God, if there's an open door for me somewhere, this is what I always pray. I'm like, don't let me miss the open door. Show me where the open door is. C. Only dead fish go with the flow. D. One word sums up probably the responsibility of any vice president, and that one word is to be prepared.
Oh, my gosh.
Which one is not Sarah Palin?
Okay, D?
Yes! You got
it! Really?
There you go. That was good. That was a tough one. D, that last quote was from Dan Quayle.
Oh, my goodness.
Back during the George Herbert Walker Bush years.
Oh, my goodness.
So that was...
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you so much.
Well,
you know, she's coming here to a local Costco here on December 1st.
Costco?
Yes.
But Costco is run by liberals.
Is it really?
Yeah, Costco is a blue company. You know, blue, red, blue, you know.
Right. No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, she's coming here, and unfortunately, I have some of my 8 kids are conservatives, and my daughter wanted me to go stand in the parking lot all night long with all those people that you played, you know, from. I just told her I wasn't going to do it. There's no way I would do that. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, jeez.
Well,
thank you.
If anybody in your family does go and they give you a report, please call in and let us know, okay?
You know, I'd love to know. I think what I will do is drive past there. They have had requests. People want to leave their RVs there at 7 o'clock the night before.
Oh, my God.
But Costco has refused to let them do that.
Well,
however, they expect about 4,500 people, of which 1,000 will get wristbands, just like everywhere else.
This is very, very strange time, Sheila. All right, Sheila, hold on.
Okay.
I'll put you on hold, and Kathy will get the information.
Thank you.
All right, well, thanks for playing. That was a toughie. Where'd you get that one, Kathy? Good Lord. Remember Dan Quayle?
I am getting desperate for trivia questions. Anyway, but see, I would ask for them from the audience, but then what people do is say, well, I want to win a podcast.
I'll write my own question.
You know, guys, we're going to either have to come up with another giveaway, or I'm going to have to start venturing outside the world of politics to try to find these questions.
Oh, no, you got to stay in politics. Oh, my God.
It's hard, man. It's hard work. It's like hard work. It's like going to war.
Yeah.
I never wanted to be a war president. I never wanted to be a podcast trivia writer.
I know you didn't. Well,
my calling. It's a calling of my time.
It is. It is indeed. Amy, we got time for about one more call. Do you want to, now that we gave away the podcast subscription, do you want to comment on anything? Where's Amy?
Oh, hey.
Amy. Yeah. Yeah, we're through with trivia tonight, Amy, but if you want to...
I can comment on something. I live in Minneapolis. I live in Keith Ellison's district and work in Michelle Bachman's district. It's a tough life.
It is. You know, I think KTNF is sponsoring an event up there in towards the end of... the end of January, and a forum with some progressive talk show hosts. I think I'm going to be there. I don't know what the details are yet, and maybe I'm, you know, saying something I shouldn't. I don't know if they've announced it yet officially.
They have.
Oh, have they? Okay. Well, maybe you'll make it and come by and see the fun of frivolity.
That sounds great. And so you're coming to Minnesota in January?
Yeah, go figure.
Okay.
I said, no, not me, but KTNF has carried our program now. I think this is the fifth year, and this is the first forum, I think, that they're putting together with, I think Stephanie Miller's going to be there, Ed Schultz, Tom Hartman, and Bill Press, and me. So it should be kind of interesting, right?
It's going to be fabulous, and you are worth the getting all dressed up.
Well, thanks a lot. All right, Amy, thanks again. Have a nice Thanksgiving. We're just about out of time, folks. So what we will do is just wish you, a happy Thanksgiving. I don't know how you celebrate this day. I try not to take to the table with family or friends all the cultural burden or the cultural burden that this holiday really represents and all the implications. I just try to take it at, I try to do it from Molly's perspective, my 5-year-old, who came home the other day with all kinds of drawings of Indians and pilgrims and having fun, having a big dinner, and thinking about a glorious future, So I'm going to accept it on Molly's level and just say, have a happy Thanksgiving. Rebroadcast tomorrow and Friday. I'll see you on Monday. Take care. Have a good holiday. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.